Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. Your Sleep Number setting. It's the Sleep Number Everything Smart Bed Sale. Every smart bed and base are on sale during our Memorial Day event. Up to 50% off, plus free home delivery. Limited time. Exclusively the Sleep Number store near you. Learn more at sleepnumber.com.
Christian parenting.
Welcome to the Christian Parenting Podcast. I'm your host, Steph Thurling. I'm the Executive Director of Christian Parenting, a mom of three, and I am so glad that you're here. This is a place where you can bring your real self, no matter what that looks like today, and be given the space, resources, and encouragement you need to set aside perfection and grow into the perfectly imperfect parent God made you to be. Giving Tuesday is a global dedicated day to giving back, and it is the perfect time to give to Christian Parenting. Our mission at Christian Parenting is to help parents all around the world grow into the perfectly imperfect parents God created them to be so that they can confidently raise the next generation of culture-changing Christians. We provide digital and printed resources, encouragement that is rooted in biblical truth, and have an entire network of faith-based podcasts just for families, including this one. But creating resources and running podcasts is not free. Just like everything else in this world, these things take time and financial commitments. As a donor-based ministry, Christian Parenting relies on generous donors just like you to continue to make podcasts like this happen. So if you love this podcast, and I hope that you do, would you please consider a Giving Tuesday gift to Christian Parenting? Every gift matters, and every gift makes a difference. So please go to cpgive.org and consider a gift to Christian Parenting this Giving Tuesday. Again, that's cpgive.org to give your donation to Christian Parenting. You guys, I was so excited for this interview. If you and your kids have not read the Wingfeather Saga yet, you really need to. It's a family favorite at our house, and my kids could not believe that I got the opportunity to sit down and talk with the author, Andrew Peterson. So today, Andrew and I talk about his heart behind writing the Wingfeather Saga, his passion for creativity, how he encouraged creativity in his own home and his own kids, and he offers encouragement for how to parent a child who doesn't quite fit inside the box. You will love how Andrew goes back to Jesus and his grace for all things, especially parenting. He made me cry right at the very beginning when he reminds us that we will all have regrets because we aren't perfect, but with time, we get the privilege of watching how God redeems our mistakes and turns them into something beautiful. I know you will love this conversation. Hi, Andrew. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Hi, it's good to be here. Thanks.
Okay, we just jump right in. So for those that don't know you or what you do, can you tell us about yourself and then just tell us about your family too? Because this is Christian Parenting. So we want to know about your family.
Of course, yeah. Well, my name is Andrew Peterson. I have been married to Jamie for almost 29 years. We're pushing our 29th anniversary here pretty soon.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And our three kids are all in their 20s and they're all married. And so as of a couple weeks ago, my third kid got married. Our only daughter. And so we're still recovering a little bit from that experience. It was a great joy. They all live here in Nashville. They're all involved in creative work of one kind or another. And we are very thankful that we get to see them on a regular basis. It's pretty great. We are grandparents. My oldest son and his wife had their first baby earlier this year. And so we are in that world. So it's funny, you asked about myself and then about my kids. And I usually answer the family and kids question first. I think it's way more interesting than what I do. I'm a singer-songwriter, and I moved to Nashville 26 years ago, straight out of college. My wife and I moved up here and started writing songs and touring around and doing music. And then somewhere in there, when the kids were old enough to read the Narnia books to them, I read them the Narnia books, which I loved as a boy, and it reawakened the longing in me to be a writer. And so I started working on the Wingfeather Saga, and And that was, I guess, almost 20 years ago, I think, is when I really in earnest started writing those books. And so in the meantime, I still do music. I still tour, but I also am the executive producer of the animated series for the Wing Feather Saga, or one of the executive producers. And then still writing, have a new Wing Feather book coming out here pretty soon, which is really fun. And then, my life is this weird mashup of taking care of the property that we live on and riding my tractor around and keeping bees and that kind of thing. And then also I love to draw and to paint. And so whenever I can find some free time, I'm trying to get good at that. And then, writing more books and doing concerts on a regular basis. And so we stay pretty busy. And it's also a really fun season.
That's very busy. That's a lot of things.
It is. It's too many things.
But I love to hear that. It sounds fun. Like you're in a great stage of life. And I love to hear people are embracing all the stages of their life.
Yeah, we are very thankful.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And then can you describe your family in that one word or phrase?
Okay. So that's a good question. Describe my family in one word. The word that came to mind was open. And I think it's because it's one of the things that I love about our family is that Jamie and I, as parents, we're always very open with our kids about our own failings, our own struggles, you know, like the things we're wrestling with spiritually or work-related, you know, family stuff. I remember there was a season, this is years and years ago, where we almost adopted three kids who were younger than our children. And we felt like God was calling us to this thing. We were trying to figure out what to do. And the bottom dropped out of it at the last minute. It was heartbreaking. And so it was one of those things where when this was all going down, we were talking to our young children about it. Like, this is a thing that our family is going to do, you know? And so they got to carry the burden of the sadness and the confusion and all that kind of stuff with us. And I remember a few of our friends were like, wait, you told your kids about all this? And I think that Jamie and I just kind of looked at each other like, well, of course, why would we not, you know? And so, you know, I don't know that you share everything with your kids, but we've tried to be very open. And the cool thing is that it means that that's been reciprocated. Now that our kids are older, we were able to kind of sit down and have really honest, good, healthy conversations with each other. Does that make sense? And so, there's a culture of openness that I think our family has cultivated over the years.
I love that because I think it's really great encouragement for people who have younger kids that like what you put in, you'll see back when they get older. Because I feel like when I sit here and I'm in my stage of parenting with elementary and middle school kids, I'm like, what is my life going to look like when my kids are older? Like, is what we're ingraining in them now going to actually stick?
Yeah,
it's a great question. Sometimes I'm just not sure.
And so, the funny thing is, like, you never know. You don't have any control over that. All you can do is faithfully do the thing that you feel called to do, and then it's on them at some point. We've just feel really blessed that in amidst all the struggles. And the funny thing too is that the parenting doesn't stop when the kids get married and grow up and leave the house. You know, I don't know if parenting is the word, but like the feeling of heart investment and what they're going through. And we're relatively young to be grandparents and parents of grown married children. And so that means we're still in the thick of it. It's not like we're retired and we're kind of like over the hump of the difficult things in life. We're still right in the middle of it all. And it's, you might as well just start now. practicing being the people that you want to be when you're older and demonstrating what that looks like. So.
Yeah, that's good. Okay. And if there's anything else you want to add, I also ask, what is the one thing you want every parent to know?
Oh man, the one thing I would want every parent to know. I imagine myself as a young man who is a new dad, younger man. And what I would want young Andrew to know. And I think that my answer would be something like, don't be so hard on yourself. Don't be so shocked when you make a mistake. you know, I have a thing where I want to be a good guy, you know, I want to be a perfect dad. I want to be super dad and all these kinds of things. And the fact of the matter is there's no way out of the fact that you are going to one day regret certain things that you did when you were a parent, certain ways that you handled a situation. Or, you know, for me, it was because I was a touring singer-songwriter. I remember when we were moving our oldest into his college dorm, and he was moving out, I was crying, you know, and part of it was obviously, yes, I'm going to miss him. And our family dynamic is changing because he's leaving the house and all this kind of stuff. The funny thing was he went to school in Nashville. So it was like 20 minutes away from us. So it shouldn't have been that big of a deal, but it felt like a big deal. But mixed in with all of that was like, oh man, you know, it's over. Kind of, we were talking a little bit about just, you know, you the last thing happens with your kid, but you don't know it's going to be the last time. I was just telling somebody the other day about how, you know, there was a last family read aloud that we had, but I didn't know it was the last family read aloud that we had when we did it, you know, because we love to read as a family. And I was just talking to a friend about the fact that he was like, yeah, I just watched this great movie with my boys. And I remembered, you know, when my boys were teenagers and I was in the mood to watch some, you know, cowboy movie or whatever, I would call them upstairs and be like, hey guys, you want to watch True Grit? And we'd hear them stop whatever they're doing. And I would hear their footsteps, doom, 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 run across the, you know, and come down the stairs. And within 10 minutes we were, you know, had popcorn and we'd be watching a movie. And, I called them my built-in bros, because I just had like guys that I could call at the drop of a hat and we would hang out. And I was like, oh man, there was a last time that happened, before they moved out. But I don't think I realized so you end up with all of these regrets, all of this feeling of, oh, I didn't soak it up enough. I wasn't as present as I should have been. I was thinking about, you know, little things that I missed because I was traveling for my job. And, you know, it's easy to go dark there and think, oh man, I made all these terrible mistakes. And there's a little anecdote that I usually tell in this, when this comes up, to other parents, but when we were dropping Aiden off and I was full of all of these regrets, I talked to an older friend of mine, who was a professor at the school, and he was like, oh, how are you doing? And, you know, everybody else was like, oh, Andrew, don't be hard on yourself. You're a good dad. And my son was even like, Pops, you know, no regrets. Like, you're a good dad. I'm grateful for you. And none of that helped me. You know, it didn't make me feel any better. But then when this older guy said, how are you doing? And I said, oh, I'm really struggling. I have so many regrets. So many things, little things that I wish I'd done differently. And he laughed and said, oh, I remember that feeling. It has been so fun to see the way the Lord has redeemed all of my mistakes over the years. And that to me was like, there's the gospel. That's the thing that my heart needed, was not some kind of like false assurance that I'm a good guy. What I needed was the deep, like foundational assurance that God is making all things new and that he doesn't, like, we aren't necessary to his plan of redemption. And so as a parent, you can rest in the fact that, yes, you're going to mess up. You're human. Don't be surprised when it turns out that you are fallible. And also you get to rejoice as you see the Lord untangle the mess that we've made.
That has me tearing up. And I feel like we can just end the interview now. That was everything I needed to hear. Good. I didn't have the best morning with my oldest son. And I've kind of just been sitting in that regret today, being like, I mean, he wasn't great, but I could have been better too.
Yeah.
You know, like, we all have those.
Now you get
to
see
a lot of regrets.
You get to see how the Lord is sowing seeds even in that. You know, I'm so relieved that that's the way that he works.
Yes. Yeah. It's good to be a believing parent. Takes a lot of pressure off.
Yeah.
For sure. Okay, I want to switch gears because I already told you, my kids are huge Wingfeather fans. Like, the Wingfeather Saga is one of our favorite series. We watch it. We read them all. We watch them all. Like, my kids love it. So my kids love to read in general. So I'm very lucky with that. But it's really fun when you find a series that they all want to read and then talk about. And it just kind of becomes, you know, part of their culture together. So what made you decide 20 years ago? Well, probably over 20 years ago now, that you decided you wanted to write the Wingfeather Saga.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I read those Narnia books to the kids. And it wasn't just those books. We read lots of books together. And I have loved books since I was a little boy. And wanted to be an author before I was ever playing guitar in high school or whatever. Wanted to be a, you know, I was way into Batman and Indiana Jones and Star Wars and all the things, you know. And just loved stories and wanted to try to tell stories in one way or another. And it turned out that like music was the way that I kind of found a way to tell stories for many years and still do. But yeah, I wanted to know what it was like to have written a big, sweeping, epic fantasy novel, which was the kind of story that I loved to read when I was a boy. And so the kids ended up being the perfect excuse to try my hand at it. You know, I wanted, mm-hmm. I've joked before that like the real motivation for writing the Wingfeather Saga was that I wanted my kids to think I was cool. and so yeah, I was just trying really hard to write a story that would keep them engaged and would kind of like stir something in them, you know? So there was a moment, when I was reading, you know, I would write a chunk of chapters and then tell the kids, "Hey, I'm ready to read the next section of the book to you." And we would all curl up and I'd read. And, you know, by the end of the fourth book, you know, the kids were a little older at this point, but I remember there being moments where my son Asher actually shouted, "Yes," you know, while I was reading the story, when some big moment would happen, or he would say, "I knew it." And it was just like getting into that really sacred space of a kid's imagination, which is potent and vibrant. And for them to like give you access to it and say, "Yes, come in with your story," is something that I took really seriously. Like, you know, I wanted to write something that was fun and just pure adventure. But at the same time, the stories I loved the most when I was a kid were the ones that got to my heart in one way or another. And adventure is one of the ways to get to your heart. And so, yeah, that was what I was trying to do, was just tell a big sweeping story and to do it as a Christian and to, you know, to not, try to write an allegory or a, you know, Sunday school lesson. I was like, what I really just want to write is, you know, what would happen if a Christian wrote Star Wars, you know, or, you know, not like Star Wars is the end all, but you know what I'm saying? Like that, just that really the flutter in your stomach that you remember as a kid when you saw a great story being told. And so it was really fun then to also get to have those conversations with the kids about what was going on. That's what I love hearing you say, that you guys talk about it. It becomes a part of the culture. Mm-hmm. Because one of the, you know, in the writing of the TV show, you know, we have this writing team that's amazing, who write the episodes. And one of my jobs as executive producer is I get to read all these scripts and make notes on them and, you know, kind of keep the core of the story on track. And so one of the things that I find myself writing in the notes is, in all caps, "No teachable moments." Which sounds funny because it's like, as a parent, like you want your kids to learn from these stories, but like in the story, there's not supposed to be a teachable moment. The story is supposed to be a story, right? So when Jesus told parables, he didn't stop in the middle of the parable to explain the parable. He would tell the parable and he was content with the fact that sometimes people didn't get it. And then later with the disciples, they would be like, "Hey, explain this thing to us." And he would be like, "Okay, here's the thing." But the principle is that he let the story be the story first. And the story is going to do its own work on the listener. And it's like the spell gets broken if you pause to say, "Now, kids, this is the blah, 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 blah." And so it's not like I don't want parents to have something to talk about with their kids. But I think the best way to do that is to let the story be the story and then let you guys do that drawing out of the themes that you're seeing in the story. Because otherwise, I think that's part of the recipe and what lets the kid give you access to their imagination, right? Mm-hmm. Is because they trust you as a storyteller. And so as a pastor's kid, you know, who grew up, like as soon as I sensed that there was a Sunday school lesson in something, I would shut down. I'd be like, "Ah, well, I can go to Sunday school for that." Like I was coming here because I wanted to know what it was like to ride a dragon. Or whatever, yeah. You know? And so, but the cool thing is stories then they sow these seeds and then later on they flower into something good and beautiful and true in your mind. at their best. And so that's what I was trying to do.
Yeah. And what is it that you want your readers to kind of come away from? Like, what do you want them to be feeling in their hearts when they do finish the series?
Oh, man, when they finish the series. I mean, I don't know if this ever happened to you, but I remember there were a few stories that I read when I was a kid that when I closed the book, I was usually by myself in my bedroom. I would kind of like lie there with the book on my chest and I could feel kind of like I was glowing a little bit. Like something happened here. something is happening in my heart. And that like really bittersweet feeling of, oh, it was so good, but it's over. And all of that stuff. That's what I really want to happen. And then I want the Lord to do what he wants to do with that feeling. Does that make sense? So like C.S. Lewis, in Surprised by Joy, he talks about, he uses the word Sehnsucht, which is this German word that means an inconsolable longing. And Lewis kind of talked about that longing, that stab of joy that was like a pain that was better than healing. It was kind of like he wanted to feel this bright sadness that came with it. And I know that feeling. Like certain songs have done that, films have done that to me. And Lewis was basically said that those moments were breadcrumbs that led him to Jesus. Because in a world that kind of tells, you know, if you're a materialist and you're being told there's nothing other than what you can see, or the world is not, you know, made by a good, fundamentally good creator who loves you and loves his creation. When you get these little moments, it kind of, the veil gets a little thinner and you get this sense that maybe there's something out there that there's something good in the world that's kind of like coursing through it all. And so that's what I would love, was for a kid to know there's something good in the world. And the good news is, like, again, C.S. Lewis, when he was writing a letter to a friend who was, he was evangelizing to this atheist guy. And he said something about how, like, I get the sense that that the Lord has you in his sights. He's coming for you. And I love that idea. Like, and even C.S. Lewis's conversion, he talks about how he just kind of quit running. And he was like, okay, I'm going to let this great goodness overtake me. And so if you can, in a story, awaken the kid's imagination to the fact that there is a person with a capital P who loves them and who has made the world and is like the whole thing is pulsing with him, I think you've done a pretty great work. You know what I mean? You've softened their hearts and made it ready to receive the gospel. So that's a high thing. Like that's on one hand. On the other hand, it's like, man, if I can just tell a good story that'll entertain the kids and give them something that they really love to encounter. And with the TV show, it's like we in some ways are like, we just want to make something really wonderfully, something that is more than entertainment, but that is entertaining and fun for the whole family to enjoy together. And then we get to sit back and watch what the Lord does with it.
To be able to write and create like a fun story, but also bring in that spiritual element where kids realize that they're loved by someone bigger than them, that it's pretty impressive because you do it well.
Oh,
you do it really well. Because I think it would be very hard to do.
I know as a mom, it is so easy to put everybody else's needs ahead of yours. And I know this because I do it too. But when hormonal changes start to take a toll on your body, it is definitely time to start taking care of you. Hormone health is so much more than just a few symptoms. It affects everything from your mood to your energy levels to how you cope with stress. If you're a woman, you know how easily hormones can get out of balance, especially with all the daily stresses of life. And when that happens, it can feel like everything else is off too. But what if there is a simple habit that you could add to your routine that could make a huge difference? That's where Hormone Harmony by Happy Mammoth comes in. Happy Mammoth, the company that started Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier, especially moms. And that means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. The results are so impressive, you guys. There are over 40,000 reviews on their website, and women cannot stop talking about it on social media and in real life too. I know so many people who use Hormone Harmony and absolutely love it. In fact, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code CPPODCAST at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code CPPODCAST for 15% off today.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I didn't realize that, well, you kind of said that all your kids work in some type of creative role now. And I didn't realize that your son illustrated the book too. So like, obviously creativity and imagination is very important to you, but into your entire family. Like how did you foster that in your house?
Oh man. Well, part of it was the fact that, well, my wife is one of the most creative people I know, but she would never describe herself as an artist. I always beg to differ whenever she says something like that, but she kind of jokingly says, like, I can't believe I married into this, you know, this nerdy fantasy author husband who's a musician and paints and all this kind of stuff. But the fact is she is like, her art is in, making it, well, hospitality is one of the biggest things. Like she's one of the best, most hospitable people that I know. And, as soon as you walk into our home, you will be foist candy on you or desserts or a glass of water or a cup of tea, whatever the thing is. She just has this urge to make people comfortable and safe and loved. And so our kids grew up with a mother like that, right? Who always, like, the openness was a big part of that. She will sit and talk for 2 hours, you know. I get antsy. I kind of want to be doing something, you know, but she will just sit and shoot the breeze in the best way. And so that generous posture toward the kids was a big part of it. I think that she just is an encourager. And when the kids were into something, she would fan the flame. And, but the fact is, a lot of it too is just living in a community of Christians who care about the arts. And so Nashville is an amazing place to live because it's a city full of poets and songwriters and painters. And, you know, it's just such a huge, it's a music city, but it's also way more than a music city. You know, it's a city of artists in many ways. And so, and then the Rabbit Room, which is this ministry that I founded 16 years ago, is kind of meant to be a gathering place for people who care about these things, whether they're artists or not. And so our kids just kind of grew up with it around. It was the water they swam in. And so I think that in some ways, they had an advantage that I didn't have, that a lot of us didn't have, growing up in the 80s, where there weren't a lot of conversations in my little Christian community in the South about how the Lord uses art to make his glory known, you know? And so I didn't know as a kid that you could be a Christian and also write movies or illustrate comic books or whatever it was. You know, I just thought being a Christian means you're a missionary or a pastor. And so when the truth is, it's like there's a seat at the table for everyone. All of your gifting is welcome in the kingdom. And so, yeah, so there, to be in a community where it was taken for granted that you could be a Christian and also be a songwriter or a filmmaker or whatever. And also, Part of it is that the kids grew up seeing it as work. Like, it wasn't like, okay, so when I was a kid, I wanted to work for Disney for a season. And I loved the idea of animating movies. I wanted to be an artist, but I realized I wasn't good enough. And so I picked up the guitar instead. But but I still was fascinated by it. And when we flew out to California to meet with like Netflix and Amazon and some of these big companies when we were pitching the Wingfeather Saga, one of those trips involved a tour of DreamWorks Animation Studios. And so I was walking around in the studio with my jaw hanging open because here are all these people doing the thing that I wanted to do when I was in high school. And I think in high school, I would have thought, oh, well, only other people do this. You know, this is a thing that like you have to live in California. Right? And then when you get there, you realize these are just people. They're just people who worked really hard at their craft and moved to the city to pursue this thing. And so that was one of the things that I didn't know that I think my kids knew, which was that art is made by normal people and they just work really hard at it. So our kids all kind of inherited that work ethic. Where they, my daughter is a singer-songwriter and she is like tireless at writing songs and touring. Aiden, the dude blows my mind because he keeps like office hours. Like he's a freelance illustrator and background artist for the Wingfeather Saga now. And he wakes up in the morning and, you know, he doesn't put on a suit, but he sits at his desk and starts to work and takes a lunch break and keeps working. Asher, my middle son, is a tour manager and a drummer and a record producer and has this amazing focus and ability to work. So that's the thing. Our kids grew up with no illusions about what it was like to have a life in the arts.
Yeah. I love that. That's such a great example that you provided for them and that they really just ran with it. Okay. But I want to hear between you doing all the things you do and then listing off all the things your kids do. Like it's a lot. So tell me about you as a kid, because you were a pastor's kid in the South. Were you always creative? Were you always a reader? Were you a good student? Like, tell me about you as a kid.
yeah, sure. I was a terrible student. I was a really bad student. I think I would have thrived in a homeschool situation when I was a kid with a little bit more freedom to explore and kind of less butt in the chair kind of time. Because I was squirmy and I had lots of interests. I was very curious about a lot of different things. And so in that system, there wasn't a whole lot of wiggle room for that. But I also love, I learned about like the Christian classical education kind of thing. Like I know there are different schools of that, but I've gone and done like book visits at different schools and their emphasis on truth, goodness, and beauty. This idea that like these things are really important. It was a language that I think I would have perked up at as a kid I had the feeling, and this wasn't my teacher's fault. This was my fault. And I guess maybe just this is what the culture was like where I was, but I just saw school as a giant waste of time. Like it was all stuff that I wasn't really interested in. I didn't really have a big enough imagination to connect why these subjects applied to this thing, you know? But yes, I was always, as long as I can remember, interested in music and drawing and reading. But none of the stuff that I was interested in doing was approved by the, you know, the education system that I was doing. And yeah. So I just was like, but I want to do this thing. So, you know, there's a lot to be said for, well, sometimes you just have to do the thing you don't want to do. There's a lot to be learned from that. And so I don't know that it would have been right for them to just give me free rein. I failed a couple classes in high school, mainly math. I had a hard time in math. And I think math's amazing, but the truth is some people's minds just aren't good at it. And I don't think it's super fair that like somebody who's good at math can't understand how hard it is to get your head around how to do like algebra. Like I just couldn't do it. And in the same way that somebody who can't sing can't get their head around how to carry a melody, but you don't make them learn to carry a melody and expect them to sing perfectly, but you are expected to do math perfectly if you don't have a math mind. So this is a soapbox of mine that is would be beaten down by much smarter people than me. But that's how I felt as a kid. It was just like, I could sit down and play piano for 4 hours straight and was writing songs when I was in high school, but I couldn't, I failed geometry, you know? And so, I had a hard time. And so then, I ended up in Bible college and was a better student in Bible college because at that point I was choosing to learn it. It was something that I really cared about and wanted to know. And so anyway, but yeah, I was a class clown. I have a hard time even now liking very much who I was when I was a kid. But I can see looking back, like, yeah, there was a lot of creative potential there. You know, I was interested in making stuff and I also love to do it in cahoots with my friends, you know, like I love doing stuff with Robin Hood and his Merry Men kind of thing. You know, like I loved the idea of having a band of Merry Men that I could do stuff with. And that has translated into doing music, you know, and playing with friends now is my job. So anyway, yeah, that's me as a kid.
Okay. So looking back on that now, and as a parent of adult kids and a grandparent, like what encouragement would you give parents to kids like you? Or maybe like, I don't know what to do with this kid. Like, I just don't know what to do with this kid. I know there's potential there. I know he's going to do something awesome. What am I supposed to do with you?
Oh man, patience. Cause you know, there's not a whole lot you can do. The kid's just got to grow up, you know, and like, get a little bit beat up by life, you know, in order to kind of realize what's really important. And for me, I wasn't a Christian. You know, I was growing up in the church. I think I was a nominal Christian, but I didn't really know who Jesus was. I didn't understand until I was 18 or so what it meant that God was real and that he loved me, you know, and that was that changed everything for me. It gave me a purpose. And that's I think that purposelessness was what I was acting out on, was this feeling of, what am I here for? What is the point of all of this stuff? I've got to make up stuff, I guess. And of course, that's going to lead to hijinks that you don't want to, that could get you in plenty of trouble. But like, you know, as soon as the veil parted a little bit and I was able to see, oh my goodness, Jesus is God and he loves me. And that all these stories that I grew up reading when I was in Sunday school and church camp and whatever were true. All of a sudden it was like I was lost in the woods and I saw a path and I knew what to do. And what I really wanted to do, it was this revelation that God wasn't mad at me, that he delighted in me like a good father delights in his son. And I was astonished by that, you know, but I knew it. I felt it in my bones that this was the truth. And then I thought, he didn't only tell me that, he then showed me, hey, there's a way to use all these gifts to help other people know this wonderful thing too. And so I was casting about, you know, in a rock band and drawing pictures that were just, I thought looked cool or whatever, reading books that were trying to find the thing that was going to wake my heart up, you know, and then realize that my whole life he'd been standing right there, you know, and as soon as I connected that in my mind, I was like, oh, now I know what to do with my life. And so, that's the thing. So for a kid like that, like he or she, they just have to come to terms with the fact that God loves them. And there's nothing they can do about it. and also that the way that he made them, the gifts that he gave them all have like the best garden for those gifts to grow in is the church. And is in Christianity, in this like healthy, beautiful garden. Like if you want to be a filmmaker or a painter or whatever it may be, the church is going to be the best support for that. At its best, the church ought to be supporting those things, you know. And you can point at 2,000 years of the best art that the world has ever known that grew out of the church, you know, as evidence.
Yeah. That was very good encouragement. And I just love the way your story always points back to Jesus just changing your life and then you faithfully following that path that he unveiled for you. And just, it's really cool to hear that type of story and that type of growth that only God can do in a person. So thank you for being faithful to that. You said you have another Wing Feather book coming out. So tell us about that. Tell us about any other projects that are going on and then how we can connect with you and find all of this stuff.
Sure. So the new book I'm so excited about. The publisher actually had the idea. They were like, hey, do you have any other fun Wing Feather things up your sleeve? And, you know, the story itself, the four books, that's that complete story. I'm not going to write more. It ended in exactly the way that I wanted it to end. And I don't want to monkey with it, but the world is built at this point. You know what I mean? Like all of the work that went into the world building. And I loved in the writing of the books, there were all these footnotes, you know, other books that the characters would reference sometimes just because I was trying to make it feel like this is a world with a real history. Pembroke's Creaturepedia grew out of that. And that was really fun. And so the publisher, asked if there was maybe another book. So anyway, what we came up with was The Ranger's Guide to Clipwood Forest, which, you know, Jan or Igaby in the first book, I think it mentions the fact that that there used to be rangers that tamed the forest so that people could actually live in the forest because it's full of all these deadly creatures. But now, of course, it's overrun because there aren't any more rangers. And so I thought, I'm going to go back and write the story of the first Rangers of Clipwood Forests. So this happens hundreds of years before the events of the Wingfeather Saga in the second epic. And I love walking footpaths in England. That's one of my favorite pastimes and you know, for your listeners who don't know England, if America could adopt this, it would be a game changer. But like they have these 144,000 some odd miles of public footpaths where you can wander through countryside, through farmland. You literally climb over farmers' fences, across their field, past their cows. They'll be out there like working and you wave at them and they wave back and you're just like a hobbit wandering through the countryside. So it's just like, that's why the English countryside is so beloved, because you can see it. You can get into it.
Yeah.
Whereas we live just outside of Nashville and I pass beautiful farmland that I will never see without getting shot, you know? And so, so I love the idea that you could just get these guidebooks and they'll walk you through on a 6-mile loop through the countryside in England. And they'll tell you about the castle ruins that are over there or the Iron Age stone fort that you can kind of see the remains of. And so I thought, ooh, I want to write a footpath guide to Clipwood Forest in the spirit of these English footpath guides. So it gives you a lot of the history, but it also tells the story of this guy, Owen Groverly, and his best friends.
I love that. And I think that we do need to adopt that.
I do too, right? Yeah, so Aiden ended up illustrating the whole thing, which is just, if I didn't know if Aiden was not my son, I would be stalking him on Instagram. He would be one of my very favorite illustrators in the world. He's so, so good. And there's the style of illustration that he does is just like perfectly the thing that I love. And the fact that he agreed to illustrate this book is just, I mean, he texted me the day after we did an interview together and I said, hey, you did a great job in the interview. And he texted me and said, thank you. I still can't believe I get to illustrate fantasy books with my dad. And I almost cried when he texted it because it's just true. It's like, again, if you had told 10-year-old, 12-year-old Andrew that he would one day, you know, get to write a big fantasy story and that his son would grow up as an illustrator that he loved and we'd get to make this thing together and that it would all be like, in the context of, what it means to be a Christian, I just wouldn't have believed you. It's like, I can't believe it now.
Well, God does way more than we could ever imagine. Right. It's like so sometimes true. I get so frustrated because I have my own plans and I would really like God to follow them. And he usually doesn't, but his plans always work out better. So yeah. I wish that you could go back and tell young you that was your future just to see a reaction.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for joining me today. Can you just let people know where they can connect with you? And I'll put all the links to everything in show notes too.
Wonderful. Yeah. So if you just go to andrew-peterson.com, you can find The Rabbit Room. You can find links to the TV show, which you can watch for free. We're finishing up season two, sort of finishing up. I've seen episodes 1 and 2, not the finished versions, but pretty much. Those are coming out. Season 2 comes out in the spring of next year. And we're already working on season 3. So like we've begun the process, because you have to kind of like stagger the different stages of the work. So we're working on that. So you can find all about that. And like there's a new Art of Wing Feather book that just came out that's chock full of illustrations from the making of the show. Aiden and his wife, Natalie, have a ton of paintings in there. And then I'm about to go on tour for the 24th annual Behold the Lamb of God Christmas tour. So we do this Christmas tour every year where we tell the story of the incarnation. And we're on year 24, which is completely crazy. I can't believe that we're still
doing it. That's amazing.
That's what's coming.
That's amazing. Well, thank you. Thank you for being on. Thank you for sharing all that. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Thanks, Steph. So good to talk to you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope you feel encouraged by Andrew. Please check the show notes for links to his books, music, and his tour that is going on now. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week, and may you remember that God redeems all things. There is nothing that is too big or too small for him. The creator of the universe delights in you and delights in your kids. He created you and them to be unique and special and placed in this very moment for his glory. Thank you so much for listening to the Christian Parenting Podcast. If you haven't subscribed, you can do that now, and that way you won't miss an episode. You can connect with us on Instagram at christianparenting_org and see more resources at christianparenting.org. And if you're a mom raising daughters, we have the perfect course for you. Visit cpguides.org to learn more about our Helping Moms Raise Confident Daughters online courses. And lastly, if you have enjoyed this podcast or other Christian parenting resources, please consider donating to this ministry. Visit christianparenting.org and click the donate button. Christian Parenting is 100% donor funded, and none of this would be possible without your help. We are so grateful for you. You're amazing. God bless you.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.